All right, welcome to another edition of the Presidio Zcash Jam.
I thought this was the Presidio Bitcoin View.
Right, somebody was calling us for...
That was the best comment that was my favorite comment on the show.
Yeah.
Where they compared us to The View, yet we don't do our fact checking, yeah, which maybe that's why they thought we're The View.
Exactly. It was pretty funny. They're like, these clowns can't even look up the price of gold and they act like they're on The View. And you're right. It's kind of funny. The only question is, who's Whoopi?
I don't even know.
I only vaguely
know that The View exists.
I don't know which character I want to.
I don't either. I only know Whoopi and Rosie O'Donnell. So take your choice.
All right, we're going to have to do our homework. All right, Whoopi, what do we got? What do we got today?
Whoopi, come on.
I don't know if I'm... I just don't even know. I don't know that show. I don't know what we're doing here. But Bitcoin still rocking, right? Let's make it a more Bitcoin-focused show this week instead of the Zcash plan that you...
We'll get into Zcash, though. You're the one that wants to talk about
Zcash.
You said that all your Silicon Valley buddies are asking about Zcash, so we'll have to talk about it.
I heard a rumor you went all in on Zcash. I don't know if it's true.
Not investment advice to dump all your Bitcoin for Zcash.
Investment advice to not do that. Well, it's funny because I actually had a fairly prominent Silicon Valley investor by here yesterday. And he was like, Bitcoin. Like, I got some Bitcoin, I got some media. I'm like in the thing, but I don't really follow it. And then I said, Presidio Bitcoin, like, you should stick around for this evening because we're having a builders jam. He's like, what is builders? I said, it's a thing we do, people building new products, new ideas, product people and other builders who are building things, and, often it's related to Bitcoin. Mm. He's like, do people even build stuff on Bitcoin? He's like, everybody I've seen is building on ETH and Solana and stuff. And I was like, okay, let's have the time.
We got a ways to go.
But I mean, I think that's exactly it. I sort of explained, the open source nature of it, and you don't get to print new L1 tokens to distribute to people to build things. So like it's kind of unsurprising that we haven't seen a ton of the kind of energy that we see in those ecosystems here. But I think the stuff that we're doing at Builder, I think is actually exactly, is pitch perfect for what we need to do to attract and nurture and instigate this kind of ecosystem.
What was his reaction? Like, was he curious? Was he in disbelief? Did he want to learn more?
We talked back and forth a bit about it. I wouldn't say he was in disbelief. I'd say he was like curious. He was kind of like, I didn't realize this kind of thing even like existed or was happening or could be done on Bitcoin. And we ended up talking about stablecoins a bit because he was like, mm-hmm. Well, it seems like if payments is important, then stablecoin seems to be quite popular, which I agree with. So, that it is popular, but I think the idea of like, new, token issuance on ETH or Solana or something, it's like, I don't really care much about that. And I don't even feel like he really cares that much about that. So we didn't really get into that, but we talked about the neutrality a lot, which is what I value in Bitcoin is like no leader.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's but anyway, great.
He wasn't able to stick around.
He couldn't stick around for Builder.
Neither did Max. Didn't stick around.
Sorry, guys. I've been way too. I needed to chill last night. But I want to hear all about it. Tell me what did we learn?
You swimming or what?
I did. No, I've been hustling way too hard. We got a couple weeks. Well, I don't want to drop too much alpha, but until we're done with the next event, I'm locked in.
Max is actually working hard for once.
I am actually harder than I have in a long time. Let's go. But it's gonna be fucking awesome. I have more to tell you about that later. So anyways, I need to unplug. But tell me what we learned last night. What was the alpha?
Well, I'll start, but David attended so too. So it was our fifth builder. Mm-hmm. Remember, we had the idea of builder in this podcast back in June, I think. And then we made it happen. So it's our fifth builder. I thought tonight or last night was excellent.
Yeah.
It was different, but it was definitely up there with, it might've been the best one.
You're trying to make me FOMO.
I'd say it like tied for first with some of the, like maybe some of the earlier ones. I actually missed last month because I was traveling in Berlin. So can't judge that one. But last night, I think positives, we had four presenters and all of them did well. And there was great crowd energy and participation. 30 plus people.
Oh, that's pretty big. All right.
Good attendance and high quality folks. And also a majority, maybe I don't know, 18 to 20 is their first time.
Oh, wow.
So there's good and bad news of that. So it's great to get new people out for sure. That's great. Yeah. And they seemed like they belong there. They seemed like they enjoyed it. So we'd love to have them come back. But the bad news is like, well, we must not have very good retention because we didn't have a lot of people who come to the previous one. So I don't know if that's a scheduling issue or what, but we'll have to pay attention to that.
Just out of curiosity, for these 20 or so new people, what was their sort of profile and how did they hear about it or Bitcoin Builder?
Didn't really ask the last one, but although we previously have learned that we're using Luma now for invites and like that seems like it's relatively new to me, but it seems like a place where people are going to discover events. And so a lot of people learned
this is where
we
need DK to show us like once we do a little snap what the children are using.
So
we see that funny
it wouldn't surprise you are using it.
We moved to it recently and it has tons of marketing discovery power, but it's not anywhere near the focus that we normally have, so it creates a lot of noise for us. But
so it wouldn't surprise me if that was a big driver. Actually, one data point. I guess we're not supposed to dox people to come, but a woman that I've known in Bitcoin for 8 years. She's a prominent designer, worked for many Bitcoin companies. She came, and I had no idea she was going to. I mean, she didn't live here, but I learned she just moved to San Francisco.
That's awesome.
She's no longer working in Bitcoin, but she's, you know, she's diehard. I mean, she's forever Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And but she learned of it through, she just went to Luma. She just moved to the Bay Area the past few weeks and she's just looking up, like she wants to get out and meet people on events, and she's still a Bitcoiner. So she came to this event. So
that's cool.
Like profile of another person, he works for is it Schneider Electric, like some huge, yeah, so if you want him to come.
Yeah, we should, exactly.
Well, if you want him to come, I'm certain he'll come to Type 1 if you want him to come. But anyway, he does like HVAC stuff. So but he's a Bitcoiner. And so he asked me afterwards, he like wants to get connected with miners to try to like do business with them. But, you know, so it's just, you know, so he doesn't work in Bitcoin, but he's just a Bitcoiner. So, yeah.
I mean, we all work in Bitcoin. Some of us just know it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. There's a tagline for today. But yeah, the audience is great. The energy was particularly great the first couple presentations. So the first presentation was Jackson Cook, who's an engineer on what?
Chatham House.
Well, no. Yeah, we publicized the presentation and speakers. So he's an engineer for Square. He presented the Square launch that we've talked about in this show. It's a good, tight, funny presentation. And again, with really good audience questions.
Was there a demo? Could someone actually do a Bitcoin transaction on a Square terminal?
There's no demo, but perhaps even better is like the next presentation was Pink Owl Coffee.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
The owners of Pink Owl Coffee came and spoke about their experience. So they, a few tidbits there. They have used the conversions feature for 2 years now from Square.
Wow.
Because they're like early alpha testers of conversions. This is the feature where a seller can say, hey, I want to save, 4% of my sales in Bitcoin.
Okay.
And then it just gets tucked away in Bitcoin and like you just dial a knob, turn it on, dial a knob, and then you're
set it and forget it. I love it.
Like set it and forget it. They've done that for 2 years and they set it to the max of 10%. And they've done that for 2 years.
Nice.
And I think they're quite public with this, so I think it's fine to share it here. And I guess I'm not following Chatham House rules since I'm saying it's them, but I think they spoke at like the Vegas conference and
stuff. You don't have to announce how much Bitcoin
I think.
But I think we heard their strap too, so don't worry.
I won't tell. I won't say how much Bitcoin
they're not self-custodying it. Let's
put it this way. I did the napkin math of what their sales probably are and what 10% would result in Bitcoin and the price fluctuation. And what they've saved makes sense to me. So I think they've had it turned on the whole time. And they're definitely like Bitcoin maxis and into Bitcoin, but like amazing job by them. And they're now accepting Bitcoin as well through Square. They're testers of that.
Hell yeah. Are they just like a local mom and pop?
Yeah, they have three stores and they just got approval the previous night for a fourth one.
That's what happens when you save in Bitcoin.
College of Marin. Yeah. So
just keep opening their stores.
They have a very nice stash of Bitcoin that they've saved. So kudos to them. They
next Starbucks.
They had tons of great feedback as well. I asked them, are you going to do promotions to your customers to spend in Bitcoin? So they're not just capturing like people like us going there to go do it. And they do have plans. They're creating some content on various social media sites that they're going to make available, and they're planning to do very steep discounts.
That's awesome.
As well. Like
beyond
like 21%.
Now, okay. So, I have a ton of questions on that. And, but I guess my central question is, so my understanding is the first year of the rollout, there is no processing fees. And then after that, it goes to 1%. That's what I read in a press release. I mean, that's awesome for a low margin business, 2-3, even 1% savings. That's great. And so they're incentivized to share some of that with the customer. 21% sounds like a losing proposition. What is their thought on that? Just to help?
Well, one quick thing, I wouldn't even like to the merchant, I wouldn't even frame it as like 1% savings. Cause like when you change your processing fees from 3 to 1%, your profit margin increases are dramatic, right? Yeah. Especially on a low margin.
That's true.
You know, if your profit margin is 10%, and you're getting 2% back, well, that's a 20% improvement to your profit margin. Nice. So, but as far as the 21%, they rationalize it as like, well, they'll probably, you know, if they're successful with this, maybe it goes from like near 0% sales to 3% or maybe 5% of sales are in Bitcoin. You know, and then you multiply that by 21%. So their overall revenue hit is minimal. Mm-hmm. And they're all behind. Because I asked the question because I think it makes sense to do things like that to change human behavior.
Right.
Change the consumer behavior to actually put in the effort to download one of these wallets, which now have pretty good user experiences, but you still have to download and install the wallet. Mm-hmm. You have to move some of your Bitcoin or buy some Bitcoin to have some spending money. Mm-hmm. You know, for a normal human being, like most, like what's the motivation to do that?
It's a pain in the ass.
We do it because we're Bitcoiners. We already have 15 wallets on our phone, but like normal person, you know, but if you get a 21% discount, now all of a sudden people are doing it.
It's compelling.
And once you get over that hurdle, well, you know, then in the future, you don't need a 21% discount anymore. And also think about the second merchant that mm-hmm. comes along. Like they don't have to offer the 21% discount.
Yeah, totally.
The person's already downloaded the wallet, has the spending wallet, and the friction's much less. So
everyone benefits, right?
So, he also related it to kind of their view on the gift card business. Because I think he said during the Christmas holiday, they have a promotion where it's like spend $100, get $50 gift card. Mm-hmm. And it has such a, like it's, in a sense, it's way too generous, mm-hmm. you would think. But he said that it all kind of makes sense because of all the additional people they get coming into the shop who might not otherwise come into the shop just for that promotion. And then they start to make habits out of that. And I mean, I could see, like, I've never been, it's called Pink Owl Coffee, right? I've never been to Pink Owl Coffee. I'm definitely going to go there now.
Yeah, actually, so am I.
So I'm literally going to go there. I was never a customer. Now I'll go there. I'll seek it out. I'll go drive across town to go find it. And I think there's probably more Bitcoiners out there who are like, oh, cool, some place I can go do it. Like you and I did the hangover down in
Vegas.
In Vegas, we went across town. We also went to that brunch place in Costa Rica.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was great. And that was our first example. Yeah.
We paid in Lightning.
And it was like novel Bitcoin, and exciting. And
So I feel like that.
It's like a marketing expense.
But like if there were another place across the street that took Bitcoin and they didn't, we would have gone to the place that took Bitcoin, right?
Totally. Okay. So that makes sense to me. The marketing expense. And I don't know if he spoke.
And the N+1.
And what do you mean by that?
Like meaning like.
You just bring friends.
You'll bring a friend and you'll tell your Bitcoiner friend, oh, there's this coffee shop. It's weird. They like 21% off.
Well, it's also sick. Like, you know, once it's on I'm assuming we'll be on the local Bitcoin map or whatever, then people start like, oh, this is the place I want to go to.
I'm going to be more bullish on this because the Pink Owls of the world, they're the first mover merchants. They're all in Bitcoin. They're going to do these crazy 21%, but they're going to benefit because they're the first mover.
Yeah.
And so it'll attract all the Bitcoiners, but also it'll attract people who want to save 21%.
Yeah.
They'll benefit from that. Then you have, now you've gone from almost no one to like a nice segment of people who have spending wallets on their phone.
Yeah, that's true.
So the next wave of merchants don't need to do 21% discounts and they benefit because now all of a sudden there's like a sizable portion of your customer base that already has spending wallets and they
awesome. Somebody mentioned he should become the Bitcoin Chamber of Commerce hub.
I wanted to mention that. So I didn't mention it, but someone said we should create a Bitcoin Merchant.
I didn't mean to attribute it to you.
Association. Yeah, I know. Man, we are breaking our own rules.
I know.
But yeah, someone mentioned like there should be like a Bitcoin Merchant Association.
Yeah.
That's how they framed it. We can talk about it on the show. I've given no thought to it. Like what does that even mean? Is it good or bad in a decentralized Bitcoin? I don't know, but it's interesting, right?
I think it's super good.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Because I mean, think about it. Like he's investing the 21% discount to get a bunch of people with these wallets. There's all kinds of other people in town who haven't invested that. He could galvanize a movement there. Now, this is not going to bleed out to like the whole world.
Not yet.
My point is if he runs the Bitcoin Merchant Association for Marin County or San Rafael or whatever, that's not going to bleed out to the whole world. He's not going to become like the king of Bitcoin commerce. He's just going to like, but he could instigate a movement.
Other people will mimic him.
Other people will mimic him and he can sort of instigate that, help them onboard. I think it's a great idea. I mean, it's just kind of an offhanded comment, but I think he's sort of accidentally in pole position to be that kind of leader. And that kind of leader is going to be great for his business, great for the ecosystem, great for Bitcoin, et cetera.
Yeah, I love that. I was just going to say, I mean, I think that the more they open source everything as well, like all the guides and the learnings like we do with our stuff, then people want to do me. Yeah. Like, honestly, the way I see this, I think the biggest thing that makes me bullish on this, besides gift cards, which is worth talking about because I have more ideas on gift cards, but is it's going to be like the Mormon church. Like, it really is. Like, you're going to have, like, you have the people that are into Bitcoin. If you haven't met someone in real life who's into Bitcoin, like...
I think everyone's has their Thanksgiving dinner table, guest.
By the end of the family member, you're like, dude, will you please shut the fuck up about Bitcoin? Like, we get it. It's your religion. Congratulations. But like, these guys, like, there's so many people that are not technical, but they are bought into the cult. And this is now, you're taking this free, like literally religious marketing team that's going to go out there probably in, button down shirts and their ties and their little book of Satoshi. And they're going to go out there and just orange pill the world.
Agreed.
It's going to be great.
And actually, we ask ourselves a lot in the show and even off the show, like why stable coins versus Bitcoin, why Bitcoin, et cetera. And it's very good to think through use cases, think through advantages, pros and cons. It's good to do that analysis. But the passion of Bitcoin,
yeah.
Where are the Mormons of stable coins?
Right? Exactly.
There aren't any. It's just big, like Stripe and Coinbase. It's big, right. Big.
I'm a tempo master. Have you heard the good word? Right.
I mean, it's just large companies trying to cement themselves as the next Visa.
Right.
And that's a completely different energy and vibe.
It's true.
Than the masses of people who are into Bitcoin and will push for that.
That's
so
true.
Like that alone could be
so good.
I'm long cults, man.
Yeah.
So a few other thoughts on the Bitcoin Merchant Association. We talked a little bit last episode about the stickers that Square's coming out with. Another thing that I think is really important that like Square does or Spiral or the broader Bitcoin space or all of the above is leave behind. Because we also talk about on this show going to all the merchants in the Presidio. Like we want to spend in Bitcoin right here where we work every day and where we visit local merchants.
Yeah.
Well, some of them use Square, some of them don't, but like we want to go talk to them. And usually when you go chat, like the person behind the counter, they're busy. They aren't the decision maker. They're not the owner or the manager or whatever. And so, you can strike up a quick conversation, but then that's usually the end of the story. It'd be nice to have a leave behind, like a one pager or some kind of card, half page card or something like that, that you can leave with them that they can read later or, they can give to the manager or owner and it gives them the pitch on why Bitcoin, right? And it should obviously heavily emphasize the getting rid of the 3% fee.
Yeah.
I'm sure Square is going to do this. It'll be Square oriented, which is great, but there should be another version, which is just more general for Bitcoin. And it may, is more neutral. Can certainly still highlight Square since that's a major option. But if there's other solutions to highlight those, but we can then, we're going to test this out here, but it can be part of the Marin Bitcoin Merchant Association as part of that open source package that gets published that then any other location in the world can adopt. And it just like, I do think like the Pink Owl folks should create a website and promote this for Marin or whatever jurisdiction whatever geographic area they want to start with. And then go from there.
I love it.
Yeah.
So one idea that comes to mind immediately, it'd be super cool to do And maybe the Pink Owl guys could be the first ones. Like, as companies announce they're turning on Bitcoin, do you know, will they have a Lightning address?
What do you mean? Like with Square?
Square, if you turn on.
Well, I hope they'll have a human readable name.
Yeah. So what I was going to suggest is what would be super cool if it's backwards compatible with either a Lightning address or an MPUB, which I know there was some testing at that at one point. What we should do is we should do like money bombs or cash bombs. Because like there's like in Nostr, this the concept of the Zapathon, right? Where they used to get together and people would just like just go crazy and just zap a whole bunch of whatever Bitcoin around. Imagine you could just, and I mean, this won't scale forever, although maybe it will, I don't know. Like as you have new restaurant, like I'm almost thinking like an advent calendar. Like,
oh, yeah.
Every new restaurant a day, it's like, hey, for example, the woman that we really want to sign up and she's going, I don't know about all this.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, here's your address.
Yeah.
Just watch.
Oh, this is a great idea.
Just watch.
Yeah.
And then we go and we do this on the show and we do this on Nostr and we'd be like, all right, guys, let's convert this woman to join us. And then people come in and just go crazy and just drop sats on her like wild. And she looks at it and goes, what the fuck happened?
Well, you're talking about having her on Nostr, because I thought you were driving foot traffic to the business.
Well, you do foot traffic to the business. I was just saying, yeah, foot traffic to the business. That's a great
idea. I think that should be part kind of that's the thing that will speak to the merchant. They'll be like, wow, I didn't even know about this. And this cult showed up and bought a bunch of stuff from me.
So
I'm joining the cult.
So we should definitely do that too. But I think there's two. What I'm saying is like, imagine you could just like take advantage of all the people that are zapping on Nostr and they all zap her at one moment. And she like looks at her wallet and there's $10,000. I agree. The foot track is even better, but like.
So I think these ideas are very close though. Like take this advent calendar idea. It's like the 30 days before Christmas or whatever, right?
And we should do that this December.
So you have like the 30 days of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And each day there's like a new restaurant in a similar geo, right? It's maybe, you know, Santa Fe or whatever. And they're going to be Bitcoin enabled. And so the leader of the Bitcoin Merchant Association says, here's the calendar, and they publish it. And then each day you open it up and you're like, oh, good. They're having, you know, tacos 21% off. And everybody shows up, foot traffic, tons of Bitcoin is spent at that merchant. The merchant's like, whoa,
what is going on?
Okay, man, these people are for real. There's a real thing. And now you've got this local area where all these people have Bitcoin on their phones, right, that they can use to transact, like a spending wallet. And you've got a whole ecosystem, kind of like the circular economy that we, you know, see a little bit in like, you know, in Costa Rica, or like I think exists in like, you know, the beach. There's the beach town.
Bitcoin Beach.
Like do Bitcoin
Zcash Beach.
Solana Beach. Which actually learned that's why it's called
that's
Solana.
Why it is. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But you could have you
down
know,
by San Diego, right?
We should do this in Solana Beach.
That would be so much fun. We take over territory.
Yeah, exactly. Just like move them out of that turf. I think it's an amazing idea. We should totally make this happen. I still think we should also offer a way for like the international people, because I do think there's so many people that like just like they want to zap around. Like I'll come out and say, now if we did 30 days of Bitcoin, I'll zap anywhere in the world.
So here's how you merge it though. Yeah. Is each business, like, you know, say Pink Owl Coffee gets an automatic Nostr account,
exactly,
for, you know, signing up on this advent calendar, and then people all around the world can then zap and effectively like subsubsidize
exactly
the 21%. So you sort of can go to
that's right, a great way of framing.
You can go to the merchant and be like, hey, 21% off, but you're going to have people all over the world sending you Bitcoin to help subsidize the 21%.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's amazing. And then hopefully merchants sort of opt into like publishing the data, or like what kind of response did they get.
Yeah.
And then because the merchant association should encourage that, so then it can be published. And then everyone who contributed to that globally would be like, you know, I played a role in that. And you feel good about yourself.
I love it.
Like Hands Across America. You remember that?
No.
You know, this is like, this is from the 80s. Sorry. Steve should know, though.
Sorry,
Whoopi. No?
We don't know.
There used to be some program. It was a fundraiser or something, but you do like Hands Across America.
And like a March of Dimes or something.
You'd literally stand there hand in hand with the next person over, and you'd kind of try to make like a stretch of people. I think they were kind of like per city, but it was kind of like all in the same day. And you just like make a chain of people who are like part of this world record thing or something. I don't know.
That sounds like a very 80s thing.
I remember We Are the World.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, like that, I think it was 6 months before after okay. that. Yeah. The right era, yes. The Simpsons were created right around that same time.
Perhaps you could give us a rendition of We Are the World for this?
Maybe next time. Give me an audio track.
And then he'll, and then he'll,
one full
then he'll wrap it.
He wants to wrap it.
He'll wrap it.
Freestyle, let's go.
That's right. Why
I might have to use the restroom when you guys do that.
Being slow to be.
Anyway, okay. But so let's follow up on the merchant association idea. That's amazing.
Brilliant. Yeah, yeah. And let's make sure. Do we know? I forget the gentleman's name, and we shouldn't say it anyway. I guess unless. Well, I guess it's allowed to be said. But do we know if he's aware of this show? Because we should share him a clip. Or
send
something.
Him this episode.
Okay. Yeah, we'll send it to him.
Yeah.
Other things that, I mean, we're still on just in the first, but it was really good. It was really good energy. Yeah. I was excited.
Yeah.
Like it boosted my already pretty high level of enthusiasm for like Square Bitcoin acceptance to the next level.
I love it.
So there are a bunch of ideas from.
Actually, I want to pause on the Square thing. I've got a question that I kind of wanted to ask Jackson, but I already asked him enough stuff. But I've been.
By the way, it wasn't Jack's son. It was Jackson.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
Sorry. Just wanted to clarify.
I've been, since we discussed on the show, every time somebody asks for cash or some sort of payment that I'm having like a one-to-one with a decision maker, I ask them if they'll take Bitcoin. And I've had a few scenarios. I think I've shared some of them with you, but I had one that I ran into this week, kind of a bigger ticket service provider. And he wanted Venmo or Zelle, and I tried, and they failed. And then it didn't really explain why, and I asked Bitcoin, and he didn't know much about it or didn't know how to do it. So I do think, like, in one of the cases, we should have a leave behind for that type of person that we can sort of a one page that we can pull out and be like, here's how this thing works. Because one of the people asked me for more information. They wanted to do it, and I'll have my son help me out.
Yeah.
So I think there's a leave behind option there, but I think there's also like the fact that Square is willing to subsidize the payment fees,
which is crazy.
I think almost could be a whole new, it could reach a whole new type of merchant who doesn't currently consider themselves a merchant. They don't want to use the POS, whatever. I don't know if you know the person I'm talking about, but like she's not going to use the POS, but maybe if you said, hey, look, free, you know, no fees and, you know, sign up on this thing, and she could kind of become like, so I guess my question is, would Square have like a Bitcoin only merchant style?
Maybe.
Because it feels like subsidizing the
fees. So have you ever heard of Register World?
No.
Do you know that Square is global?
Well, that's what I was about to say. Like, my immediate thought was you could do this globally.
So I'd worked at the company for like 4 years and never heard of Register World. And Register World is a version of Square that anyone in the world can use.
Just
and it's been around for like 8 or 10 years or something.
It's a separate company or like?
No.
It's just all this Square suite.
It's
no
a
payments.
Product called Register World.
So it's like invoicing and stuff or?
Yeah. So, you can accept cash and.
You can do cash. Okay.
And then like, you know, it handles. So.
Oh, shit. I get this now.
Right.
It's going to be big.
So that already exists. And actually, like, I think it's popular in like Mexico City and like, it's not like some resounding success, but it has like pockets of it does have usage. But you can imagine to like, let's turn up the volume on that, amplify it, use that as a vehicle for Square internationally and add Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin shares a lot of characteristics with cash. And it also can be like, you don't need to go get licensed in all these different countries, right?
That's
Max seems excited about
that. That's huge. Because now Square can, because Jack always said over and over and over, he's like, this is what we use to go international. I kind of got it, but with this, you could literally just plug that in today and have the cult members in every city around the world. And now Square is a global company. Oh, man.
Yep.
That's good.
Yeah. So I think that would be an exciting direction. So.
And we could even then, we could nationalize as we have our, the Mormon, whatever movement in the US, you can have localized, translate to Spanish or Mexico. Oh, this is good.
Technology wise, it gets into the question of like, how do you deliver it, right? Because if it's custodial, well, then you need some kind of like,
be non-custodial.
Some kind of licensed somewhere and some offshore, this or that or whatever.
But if it's non-custodial.
And then if it's non-custodial, so is it Lightning or Arc or Spark or this or, you know.
And imagine for a minute, once you have the non-custodial version, then you can do that in the US too. And so then that opens up a whole other market. So like there's like the guys selling you burritos. Anyone that deals with cash in the US, now all of a sudden you get that.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah. So I think it's an exciting direction. Another potential exciting direction and a request from Pink Owl and other people in the audience last night was Bitcoin-backed loans, mm-hmm. Where, you know, which just seems like a natural feature for Square to offer, because first of all, Square already offers loans to merchants, but non-Bitcoin. But now if merchants are now saving in Bitcoin and have Bitcoin, why not be able to tap into that Bitcoin to get fiat loans to build their, you know, grow their business, build their business, pay expenses or whatever.
That's awesome.
So that seems like a very natural extension. And obviously there's already two Bitcoin-backed loan companies working out of Presidio Bitcoin, one of which we'll talk about in a few minutes because it was another presentation last night. And there's several others. So I think that's like a no-brainer to happen in the future for, yep. for merchants. Some other feedback was like, you know, well, we mentioned Pink Owl might give a big discount. But an idea for Square to improve would be to make that just dead simple in the yeah. UI for the merchants to just be like, you know, I want to give the customer a discount and then like a dial, like 1%, 3%, 21%, whatever, and then have that marketed in the UI. Maybe some of the marketing collateral that Square might provide merchants could also, you know, emphasize that, highlight that. But basically try to drive more traffic than just the people who already know they want to spend in Bitcoin, but everyone else who you're visiting. So make that just dead simple for merchants.
Has Bob talked about, did he talk about what he's doing there at all?
Not
publicly.
Yeah, I don't know what... Okay, Bob was there and Bob talked to Pink Owl and Bob's excited. Let's just leave it.
I won't dox Bob, but like there are some really good ideas about things you can do with gift cards that interoperate with the Bitcoin network that I think could be a game changer. So... Yeah.
So that's exciting. And then what are some of the other ideas? Let's see. Loans. Pink Owl also suggested that Square, and I'm saying Square, but really anyone providing merchant solutions in Bitcoin, it's an idea for them too, would be tutorials and educational material for the employees at a merchant. Like Pink Owl, like the owners are bought in. They get it. They know how to use it. They understand. Like, they have the talking points down. When they hire people at their coffee shops, they aren't necessarily hardcore Bitcoiners or know what the talking points are, or know how it works. And so providing tutorials to employees at a merchant, that, you know, that seems to make a lot of sense.
And I think he mentioned too, the payroll. I think Square has a payroll product that they use to pay their, I think he said 40 employees.
Yeah.
So right now that doesn't tightly integrate with Bitcoin, but it could be made to.
Yeah, well, because I think I asked the question: Does Pink Owl, since they're so hardcore into Bitcoin, do they ask their suppliers to accept Bitcoin to try to create this virtuous cycle? And they said yes, they do ask that. They also try to get paid in Bitcoin if they do an event, they ask the event, "Will you pay us in Bitcoin?"
Wow!
And they also try to pay they offer the option to their employees to pay them in Bitcoin, which gets to DK's point. Cash App does have the feature paid in Bitcoin where. If you're a Cash App customer, you can just, you know, change a simple UI, change a dial so that if you do direct deposit to your Cash App account mm-hmm. in, you know, in dollars, then you can say, I want 5% or 10% or whatever converted to Bitcoin. And I believe it's like no fees.
Really?
Yeah.
No fees. Wow.
Don't quote me on that, but I believe that is true.
That's a big deal.
What I took away from last night is that Square also has direct deposit and they don't yet have like the paid in Bitcoin feature. But you know, so if the employee accepted it at Cash App, their direct deposit, then they could do it.
So,
but it'd be nice if it was integrated directly into Square.
Two thoughts that come to mind immediately. I'm sure this is in the plans, but there should be obviously some kind of like referral system, like in Cash App, you refer a friend, you get a referral. If you sign up, someone out there hustling and you sign up someone as a merchant, hopefully there's like some referral fee for you. But what would also be cool is if there's a way for the individual to split that referral fee with the person at the cash register. So imagine for a minute, you're like, hey, you know, there's all this Bitcoin stuff. It's interesting for you and you can get paid in one day. By the way, if you help me sign your guy up, you know, I get 10 bucks, you get 10, something like that.
I think someone also asked whether what the access controls are to the Square seller management console to enable Bitcoin, because if any person behind the counter can do it, then you could be like, hey, I'll give you some Bitcoin if you just tap that button. But I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, that's, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, anyway, so really good presentation. The next presentation was from the head of design from Fold, And I thought he also presented at Design Week last month, Joshua Philippe. I thought his presentation last night was like really good. He basically went through, he joined earlier this year, Fold, and he just evaluated their design system and found tons of areas to improve. So he walked through the problems he discovered, and they were, and he did a good job showing how they were pretty problematic and really slowed down their development process too because of all these problems. I thought he communicated that well. And then he walked through like their new design system and which they're still, I think, building out, but you know, talked about their token as well, but not so you had to attend, Max. No, a design token, not the kind of tokens you're thinking about. But yeah, I thought that was, I mean, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
That's great coverage. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then the last presentation was from a member here at Presidio Bitcoin, Andy, who is our inaugural EIR, entrepreneur in residence here. You know, he came from Buenos Aires to work from here for like half a year. And so he just presented on his business, which is, guess what? A Bitcoin-backed loan startup. So he beyond just talking about the product, I mean, he spoke to like the, gave sort of the Argentina flavor of it and like some context in Argentina. So I thought that was good too.
Super cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
Anything else from Builder? I mean, we spent 40 minutes on it, but
we should, Deanna asked a couple of questions around this methodology. Can you guys talk about the pros and cons of making Bitcoin everyday money? Why would someone not want to use as a means of exchange right now? How does it overcome the push-pull with its store of value? Mm. I think we kind of spoke about that. If you get 21% discount, that's pretty cool.
Well, that was a topic at the...
We talked about it last night. There were quite a few responses, but I get... So it's common for Bitcoiners to say, I don't want to spend my Bitcoin because the number is going to go up. That's very common thinking. I don't think it actually makes sense though. Because you could, most humans can compartmentalize savings and spending.
Right.
And like I have a 401k and I own like the S&P 500 index in that. And it's kind of like I signed up for it when I started the job and then I don't think about it, touch it. It's just there. It hopefully grows over time. Then I have like my billfold or my checking account or some kind of spending account. And they're just like conceptually two completely different things for me. And I think you can do the same with Bitcoin. So yes, you have your stack that you don't touch, cold storage, whatever, you don't touch it. Great. You're not going to be spending that. Instead, you have a spending wallet on your phone, put $50 in, $100 in, whatever, and spend and replenish, right? So then like if you're super hardcore Bitcoiner and you're like, oh, Gresham's law, I only want to, I want to spend the shit money, not the great money.
Well,
then,
the loans.
And then you, if you're that hardcore, don't even hold dollars. Like you're going to hold all Bitcoin and then you have to spend Bitcoin because all you have is Bitcoin.
Well, unless you're taking out loans against your Bitcoin and you're 120%.
Or loans. And so, someone mentioned that as well. So, I think it's commonly thought that way. I actually don't think it really holds water. I think number one is that there needs to be compelling reasons to spend your Bitcoin.
Yes.
And right now it's largely just Bitcoiners seeking out ways to spend Bitcoin. Yeah. The 21% type of discount is going to get normal people
super
doing
compelling.
It. And then it'll, and like we talked about earlier, it reduces friction and then it'll just become more of a habit.
The number one question I still have on all that, I buy all of that in a neutral world. However, the big issue that I always come back to is like, and I don't know if we're ever going to get this, but like the whatever tax exemption, that seems like the biggest friction point. Cause it's like, yes, replenish your Bitcoin, but it's like, you have to deal with the accounting nightmare if you're ever whatever. I mean, like.
So if you would have attended last night.
Yeah. I'm giving the recap.
But our audience would last year. Yeah. Someone raised that point. It's certainly a good question. And that's why there's people in Washington, D.C. fighting to get the law changed and have a de minimis. And we talked about this in the show before, $300, $600. I mean, last night, I think one person was saying it needs to be between $1,000 and $10,000, but some kind of exemption for payments. But also a point raised last night, definitely Chatham House rules, but it's like civil disobedience or like, first of all, there's going to be a group of people who are just civil disobedience. So they're going to pay in Bitcoin because they're trying to start this movement and they're not going to report on the taxes. There's another group of people who won't know they're supposed to report this on their taxes, and they'll spend in Bitcoin, and then they just won't do it because they don't know. But I do think that that will happen. That demand will help change the law as well.
Totally. Once you have enough people doing it, then
And it's, you know, it's someone, myself, I can out myself, right? No, I related to like Uber. Like Uber was illegal or considered illegal or challenged to be illegal in many different cities, but there was like such substantial demand by consumers. Like a couple, like Austin, I think kicked out Uber for a year or two or something, but I mean, it was like a completely failed attempt because there's strong consumer demand. So we don't have that kind of consumer demand today for people spending in Bitcoin, but we can get there.
Yeah.
That's good. I think that'll help change the law.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Any other? Yeah. How to overcome objections from merchants who only accept cash? Well,
non-custodial.
Well, but one, I mean, to me, merchants who only accept cash, I think they're ripe for accepting Bitcoin because they're missing out on the convenience of digital money. And they I'm sure they know it. I'm sure they have a lot of customers come and like then walk away. I mean, I did this in Berlin. I didn't have any euros with me. So I went to this coffee shop and they're like, sorry, it's cash only. And I walked away and they lost out on a sale. So undoubtedly that occurs every single day for merchants and wherever they are in the world if they only accept cash. So they'd love to offer the convenience of digital and accept money from more people, more customers, but they don't want to pay the fees. And so I think that the sales pitch is even stronger for such merchants.
Yeah, I think you need non-custodial to win them over, but we'll get there.
But I think people, there's a mentality right now that if it's digital, it includes some sort of fees. And cash obviously does not as you hand it, right? So I think there's like a little bit of a learning gap, like custodial, non-custodial is like kind of an advanced topic compared to like digital. The assumption is digital always comes with fees. So if there's a new type of digital that doesn't come with fees, that's notable and kind of needs to be sort of almost like the headline pitch.
Well, so Deanna says their cash is untraceable though. So I think that is a concern for cash only folks. I mean, we'll talk about privacy in a little bit, right? And so, again, if you're accepting, you know, Visa or any traditional digital money, it's all traceable. So for those accepting money that don't want it to be traced for whatever reason they might have, existing digital monies are horrible for that. Bitcoin, while its privacy is not perfect, is dramatically better. It's much closer to cash than it is any of the other forms of digital money, at least traditional digital money. And if they're using Lightning, it's relatively private. So I actually think that's a sales pitch. I mean, if you're coming from cash and there's maybe a little bit weaker privacy with Bitcoin than cash, maybe some are deterred. But I think the convenience win and broadening how many people can be your customer, that is, and you still get most of the privacy win of Bitcoin that you have a cash, I think that's a pretty compelling proposition.
Yeah.
So
it's awesome.
Should we talk about
anything else?
Zcash then?
Sure. Well, the reason I raised this is, I've known of its existence for years, but never really followed it super closely. But recently I've gotten a bunch of pings from friends of mine in Silicon Valley who are like, you know, I'd call them like mostly Bitcoiners, but then they're like, oh, have you heard so-and-so is saying something about Zcash? What's going on? So I've been getting a lot of those questions. I'm like, why is this all of a sudden like a topic? Why are we readdressing this? So I don't claim any expertise in it, but I did ask you guys in the chat, like, are you guys hearing this? Are you seeing this? Why is all this FUD coming up? Or like, is there something that we should be studying here? Is kind of the question. And I think there's not something really new, but I think it's worth like, why is it blowing up in everybody's feeds and they're hearing about it? And is there something like, what are the story? Like it's true that Bitcoin is not super private. It's better privacy than Visa, but it's not as good as maybe Lightning, right? So I think from a starting point, people are like, oh, well, Bitcoin does have this privacy problem. And I think we and most Bitcoiners probably do care a lot about privacy. And we kind of can admit that at the base layer, Bitcoin doesn't have the privacy characteristic that you would hope for or aspire to. So the question is like, what kinds of things might make Bitcoin achieve the kind of privacy we want? And does Zcash offer some hope or promise, or is there something to learn from it that could be incorporated into Bitcoin?
We also need to break down different types of privacy.
That
rarely gets discussed when people are debating privacy, but it's really important because different people are going to have different perspectives on this type of privacy is important to me, this one isn't, or this is important to society, this one isn't. And then also, like, is this coin or this technology solution, does it solve that or this, that, or the other?
Right.
So one is like that you that your transactions are not public for the world to see. And like most blockchains to date are public, including Bitcoin to a certain, we can get into the nuances, but the transaction data is public. There's not identifying information in that. But the amounts and the sender and receiver like identifiers are
like
there.
An address though. Like,
yeah.
Like if I pay you in Bitcoin,
it doesn't
you
say
can
Dave
see
and Steve.
An address and an address and the amount, but you can't see our names or something.
Yeah, but if you ever touch anywhere near KYC stuff, it's quite easy to find that.
Well, it's easy for kind of certain institutions and using certain software to do it, but a random person can't show up and just be like, oh, that's obviously DK Payne.
But that's extreme anti-privacy, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's just public information and your adversaries can see it, your neighbors, your family members.
Yeah.
And there's different types of people you might care about privacy. Like if you're a 16-year-old buying video games or whatever, and you want to keep that a secret from your parents, you don't care about you don't care about like China adversary or something like that. You just care about your parent adversary.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there are different types of people you want to keep your privacy from. Another is just like using Visa or Cash App or PayPal or whatever, or just your bank. And that's where that institution knows all about your financial history. They are regulated. They're generally safe. It's safeguarded so that it's not publicly revealed. There's a threat of like hacks and that data can leak, but they in most cases do their best to minimize that risk. And it can be exposed to government, but that requires process, et cetera. So there's that type of privacy. Then there's privacy, which might be a reason the Zcash stuff is popping up, which is part of the not Bitcoin Core debate right now. The latest wrinkle in the past month or so has been about illegal content, specifically CSAM, that if it's put in the blockchain, then it's like on everyone's computer that is running Bitcoin. And some people are claiming that's illegal and you're going to get in trouble if you run Bitcoin. If it has that content. So that's where if you had privacy, like if that data, no one even knows if that content is actually on your computer or not. But that gets into a whole nother debate too. Like if there is illegal content on your computer, is that legal or illegal? Even if you have like sort of nothing to do with it, you have no intent or whatever. Secondly, if it's encrypted, does that matter? Probably not. Maybe that's a reason Naval's tweeting about protecting, if Bitcoin fails, then Zcash. Maybe he's alluding to that and just saying that like any kind of blockchain with a layer one, it's not fully private, that it's an attack vector for governments to come after it. Where if it's private and no one knows what's in there, then it seals up that attack vector. Now, of course, Zcash has suffered to date because exchanges won't list it or at least with shielded transactions.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a super important point, which I'm sure we'll get into the details. With Zcash, one thing people don't understand is that you can use it unshielded or shielded. The vast majority of people think they're using Zcash privately or not because you haven't turned on shielded transactions. Don't turn on shielded transactions, by the way, because the size of that proof is so fat that it's extremely whatever data intensive. So to be clear, most people that are using Zcash think they're getting privacy and they're not.
So my take on this, the Zcash bubble from the past few months or whatever, it feels, smells and looks and feels like a pump and dump to me, and just people pumping their bags and then come up with narratives around that or whatever. I'm not aware of any real no usage increase in Zcash. And in fact, one company said that they've literally seen zero Zcash transactions in the past 2 months since the price increased. So I think it would be far more interesting if there was like a big usage increase. I'm not a big dark web user, but I hear that
you hear
his dark web friend so
my dark web friend that Monero dominates there and not Zcash. So to me, that's pretty telling.
That's extremely telling.
So any kind of, I mean, so to me, the more interesting question is like the higher level, you know, get abstracting from any specific coin like Zcash or even Bitcoin, but just like the how important is privacy at layer one to protecting cryptocurrency from the state? I think that's an interesting question. And then we should discuss like the trade-offs too. If you do have confidential transactions or zero knowledge proof, like full privacy at layer one, that comes with fundamental trade-offs.
Huge ones, yeah.
And it is huge ones. You can no longer have assurance that you can audit the supply and the minting of the coin. If there's a crack in the crypto, if you're quantum,
inflation bug, which we found in Bitcoin
or
before.
Bugs, somewhat black swan events, but they absolutely can happen. They can happen. Then you got runaway inflation of the coin and no one knows. You can't prove it.
Right.
And you don't even necessarily know it. But all of a sudden, it would obviously dramatically change the entire money system, right? Imagine like inflation that no one knows about, but it's like out of control, like 1,000x inflation. But that's
now you're sounding like the USD.
If it was 1,000x, like people would start to know, but like we don't, how much is it? Is it, you know, 20% or 1,000x? So I don't, even if we could wave a magic wand and change layer one Bitcoin to have zero knowledge proofs in this way, I don't think the majority I would not personally want it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you guys wouldn't either. Yeah, and I think a lot of Bitcoiners would not want it either, because I think you can deliver sufficient privacy on Bitcoin without doing that and without sacrificing the auditability of the system.
So a couple thoughts I just want to add to that. Number one, always when you're seeing, you know, whatever pumping, like first question, like, how much Zcash does Naval own, right? Like, I think he was the seed investor for whatever it was, the Z Corporation, Electronic Cash Corporation, whatever it was. So like, yeah, I mean, this guy, like he pumps his bags, watch him over the last decade. It is what it is. Although I believe through one of his other funds, they owned a lot of Monero too. So interesting, but he probably has more Zcash. So just always question who's telling you and why, what's their incentives. Number two, on the privacy point, I agree with you, Steve, 100% that like, you know, I think one thing that's maybe clashed in the whole cryptocurrency world is like the sort of the order of operations and also the sort of value stack. The reality is, and this is kind of where I think we get in trouble with politics and everything. It's like, look, if everyone could promise like, you know, a pony for everyone and sunshine and rainbows every day and pots of gold popping out of the sky, great.
It's a fundamental human right.
Yeah, it's fundamental human right. Amazing. But like, we live in, you know, a world, at least as far as we know, in this dimension where there are trade-offs. And so you have to make difficult
like
decisions.
Like the qualifier.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean,
unicorn and rainbows.
Yeah, exactly. Unicorn and rainbows and Satoshi comes and chills with that, like whatever. But so when you think about, so the order of operations, and this is, I think, a fundamental sort of debate in the Bitcoin community is like, is it cypherpunk first and foremost, or is it sort of Austrian hard money Ron Paul? And, you know, personally, I think the hard money thing is more important, right? First of all. But number two, even if you think they're both really important values, which I do, the other thing that I think that the whole crypto community and people like Naval or like the poster children for this have gotten wrong is you just have to zoom out and understand it will scale in layers and you just can't rush this thing, right? And so, you know, we've talked about in the past, like, you know, people were pumping Dogecoin and Litecoin and Bcash and all the things because Bitcoin is too slow. It's a payment system. It needs to be cash for everyone. It's like, yes, and it will get there. But this is OSI protocol stack. Bitcoin is layer one TCP IP. On top of that is Lightning. That's the HTTP or SMTP. You'll get your payments. Tranquilo, relax, like poco a poco, right? And so I think same with the privacy. To your point, you know, and there's been huge debates. I think the only kind of like, one of the only credible competitors to Bitcoin in my mind is Monero. For many reasons, I think Monero has a lot of other really interesting properties besides just the privacy. But even on the privacy, Super Testnet has like gone to war with the Monero community. It's kind of funny. And like, I haven't followed close enough to have a strong opinion, but his general TLDR is Lightning's more private than Monero. And the Monero community gets like super like in kerfuffles and mad about this. But like, I don't know, man, Super Testnet just continues to troll them. And like, I think he's probably right. And so, what I will say is, you know, Monero has found, because the dark web uses it, clearly the market has spoken on that versus Zcash. But I think in the long run, Monero, you know, for better or for worse, is going to die too, because you can't find these inflation bugs. And that, like, the people that are super into Monero, like, they're super cypherpunk first and foremost, but they can't wrap their head around why protecting against inflation is more important. And the same thing with their decision with mining. Like, you know, and I say this to someone, when I went deep down the rabbit hole for a minute, I actually jumped from Bitcoin to Monero because I read a paper on this and I was like, oh my God, without privacy, you can't have fungibility. Monero has the pure launch. You know, there is no token pre-mine. It's got all these other interesting properties. But then the more I started going deep on that, I was like, okay, but if you can never answer that question fundamentally, then like it has, I mean, at some point something will break, whether it's, you know, by a state actor, whether it's an accidental bug, like something's going to break and it will hyperinflate just like everything else. Their mining point. So they hard fork every 6 months. I don't know if they still do, but to prevent more hash rate from getting the network, it's like, dude, that's so dumb. The hash rate is what secures the network. The energy is the point.
And whoever gets to decide how it's changing has too much power.
Exactly. Right? And so they're sitting
and
there.
Give them restriction. I mean, we talked about this before.
Yeah, we talked about it. Anyways, it is what it is. But the point is, like,
he's fired up. Let him
go. Bitcoin's going to scale in layers. You have to have the auditability at layer one. You'll get the privacy at layer two or layer three. And yeah. So
I think it's fair to just summarize, like, auditability is way more important than privacy, despite how much we all love and value and appreciate privacy.
I'd qualify that. I wouldn't want the audience to take away at least my perspective.
That's
and
my
I think
perspective.
You guys agree that privacy is extremely important.
Sure.
Yep.
It's just that I believe that Bitcoin can deliver the necessary privacy without having to impact layer one. Even that needs nuance. There are many privacy improvements that have already happened and more in store that can impact layer one in a positive way. I just don't think we need to change it so that we lose auditability to get the privacy we need in Bitcoin. But privacy is very important to cryptocurrency.
Yep,
for sure.
Yep, for sure.
We all agree on that.
Yeah. And for just to clarify, just to make sure we're all on the same page, when we say auditability, we mean it's all open source code. You understand how it worked. You understand there's 21 million. It's like all of those
more
features.
Than just the code, though. It's the data. The data.
Yeah. So all of the transactions.
The data is auditable.
I think we
know, like with Bitcoin,
transactions happened.
You can do it initial block download with Bitcoin Core, and you yourself, self-sovereign, can know there has not been inflation on the system.
So the number one thing, I think we've said this on the show before, but to like keep hammering this point home, because I think this is what Silicon Valley, everyone else needs to understand. In order for Bitcoin to win, it is critical that for a normal person, they can, whatever it is, $100 or like a normal person's salary can easily, if they wanted to, buy the hardware to at home, do a full block download and audit the system. Most people won't, but it is critical. The day a normal person...
Right.
Does not have that option because it's too expensive, too complex, it dies. And this is the thing I used to, you know, when I was investing in crypto, you know, in a former life, you know, I had managers at big funds tell me, it's like, well, decentralization doesn't matter that much. Like, no, you don't understand. Not only does it matter, it's the only thing that matters. If that piece dies, Bitcoin dies.
Cool. Anything else on Zcash? Do we have good enough answers for
I think
our,
it's good, yeah.
Our
I think at least the people
friends.
Who are reaching out, I think would benefit from hearing your thoughts on it. So thanks for sharing that.
Cool. Can I give a quick shout out to Chaincode Delegation?
Sure. What's that?
Yeah, what is Chaincode Delegation?
Shout away.
So a couple people just published a draft Bitcoin improvement proposal, one of which is Jervis Tan, who's an engineer at Block on BitKey, and the other is Jesse Posner, who is a former engineer on BitKey.
Go Jesse.
And he's currently a member here at Presidio Bitcoin. So shout out to Jesse.
Fun guy.
And Jervis, both great guys. And so they had worked on this project when Jesse was still on BitKey, I believe. I'm certain. And now Jesse has his own startup, but he still very much believes in this idea they had. It's called Chaincode Delegation. So they published it on the Delving Forum this summer, and they just recently published a BIP. And the BitKey product team just announced that BitKey is going to soon have this implemented. So what is it? Well, it improves privacy. We were just talking about privacy. So it is one way to improve privacy within Bitcoin, and specifically for collaborative custodial solutions. So BitKey is a 2 of 3 multisig out of the box. So it's collaborative. It's not only 2 of 3, but it's collaborative in the sense that one of those keys is held by Block. So the customer holds 2 keys, one's on their phone, one's on their BitKey device. The third key is with Block. So You know, there's other solutions that are like this from Unchained and Casa and other few other companies. The trade-off's always been, though, that you lose privacy, because every transaction you do, even if you don't use the key from your collaborative partner, they can see all your transactions on chain. And so it's not good for privacy that the provider sees all your transactions. Ideally, if you're not using their key, they don't know that you've moved.
Is it because of a shared XPub or?
Because of a shared XPub. Okay. Yeah, exactly. And so the idea behind chain code delegation is that you don't share the XPub with that collaboration partner. And chain code, in case people are not familiar with it, it's a technical term within Bitcoin and specifically BIP32 HD wallets, where let me give a little bit of history on this. Original Bitcoin, if you had a wallet, you know, you'd have a private key and a public key, and you might produce an address from that public key, but then I'd give you the address, you could pay me. Good privacy practice is to not reuse that address, because if I reuse that address, then if you pay me next, you can learn about my payment from him, right? And the whole world can see that they're linked. So you don't want to reuse an address. Well, original Bitcoin, that was like a real pain in the ass, because every payment I'd want to receive, I'd have to generate a new public private key pair, and I'd have to manage all those private keys, especially if you're a merchant. Or imagine an exchange, you have millions, right? So you'd have millions of these unassociated public private key pairs. So the HD wallets created a system where it's much more manageable. You could just have like a master private key, which generates everything deterministically. The HD stands for hierarchical deterministic wallet. So you could start with one key, generate a key of trees, and anytime you start up, if you lose all those keys, but you still have your master key, you can start with that and regenerate all the keys you need to find your funds, spend your funds, etc. So a massive UX win.
Isn't it like you have like billions of addresses?
Basically
infinite.
Yeah.
But there is an order to them.
Yeah, deterministic order. Yep.
So like sometimes I think in the software, there's like you're only looking at the next 10 where you don't find any, or you'll kind of look ahead 10 until
there's
you
like
find
a gap limit.
Yeah,
so like the software wallet has to determine a gap limit. How many do you look ahead?
Do you want to look at all billions or infinite?
But the reason, so within that system, the HD wallet system, is this notion of chain code. And it's so that you can from an XPub, you can derive the whole tree. Like a popular way to use BTC Pay as a merchant is that, so if I'm a merchant, I can use a third-party service running the BTC Pay software. All I have to do is give them my XPub. I can have, my wallet can be in cold storage, and then all the payments that are accepted just go straight to my cold storage wallet. It's quite nice. And that third party can keep serving up invoices, each one with a new, fresh address, and they're just generating it from this tree, right? So that's quite nice. But in that scenario, you do lose your privacy to that third party you're trusting, because they can see all of your wallet transaction history, even if they're not the one serving up the invoices. So back to this proposal, chain code delegation. It's where if I'm using BitKey, or again, it can be any collaborative custodian, if I'm doing a transaction where I'm using the keys I control, I don't have to share any information with the third party. Instead of sharing the chain code and like the XPub so that they can see all transaction history, they created devised a system where you only have to like send a tweak to just that one public private key pair, so that it can still properly do like velocity controls and it can properly sign. And one thing Jesse was telling me right before he hopped on the show is that there's actually two variations they mention in the BIP, one that's a blind signer and one that's a non-blind signer, with varying trade-offs. If it's a non-blind signer, it's more practical to implement today, but it would mean that the third party would still become aware of transactions that you ask it to sign.
Yeah.
The blind signer, though, then they wouldn't even know about the transactions that they're signing for. But that would probably require something like zero knowledge proof technology, which is maybe impractical for like a mobile phone to be able to deliver today. But high level, what does this mean for BitKey customers? But also, since it's an open standard that they publish, any other product can adopt this, is improve privacy when you're using a collaborative custodian. So I think that like Unchained and Casa and other hardware wallets would want to adopt this to improve user privacy.
Does this potentially open opportunity? You mentioned, I don't know any of these companies, but more opportunity for businesses to start basically helping to serve BTC Pay Server for companies that want to use that? In a, I guess, potentially more private way? Or?
Well, I think in this case, they're also, I'd have to think about it more, but I don't know if it helps that use case because the third party here is also serving up like invoices for the, so it's like basically a UI for the merchant as well. So I don't know if you'd be able to deliver the same privacy in that case.
Interesting.
But these are, this would mostly be implemented by these third parties who are kind of coordinating payments on behalf of somebody else who's holding it in self-custody?
Yeah, so like a BitKey, a Casa, Unchained. I mean, so anyone using a wallet where you have collaborative custody, which by definition means you're relying on a third party, or you're being assisted by a third party, not necessarily relying on the third party, but you're being assisted by a third party. If you want to improve your privacy with that third party, that this improvement, it matters.
And so this is in a BIP formed. What does it take to get from there to?
So the draft BIP, yeah. BitKey's announced that they're going to, they're implementing this and they're going to ship it. I hope to see other products adopt it as well. I mean, other than engineering time, it seems like a no-brainer to do. It's just an overall win for the customer. Mm-hmm. And once there's two implementations, then the BIP can become like ratified or whatever. But I like BIP. I mean, honestly, I don't think BIPs really matter. People put way too much weight on BIP. So, I mean, there's BIP, there are things that have been adopted by the ecosystem for like a decade and the BIP still isn't even like finalized or whatever. And like no one cares. Like, what matters is it a quality idea and then adoption.
Rough consensus and running code.
That's what matters. So, let's hope BitKey ships this soon. And it works well and people gain privacy and other people follow and adopt it. That's what we hope for.
It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a pretty
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Love it.
Pretty cool win.
Love the shout out.
Yeah. Go Jesse.
How are we doing on topics here? Hackathon Cyberpunk?
Well, we can talk about NBA. Like,
oh, actually, yeah. That's a good way.
Arrests and stuff.
Arrest? I didn't even get that. I was just going to say, I got excited because...
we can start about the...
Let's talk about the NBA.
The NBA is like off to a bang this week, right? I mean, we're like 2 or 3 days into the season and...
Chauncey Billups is in jail.
Yeah. So we'll start with like some of the athletic highlights.
Okay, let's start with that one.
But did you see... So probably what you were doing last night is watching the Warriors game. But I got home from the Builder event last night and I'm like, I missed a damn good game. It was Warriors Nuggets, and it went to overtime.
Who won?
Warriors. Ooh. In overtime, and Aaron Gordon scored 50, career high. Wow. For Denver.
Wow.
Is the most efficient 50 points ever scored in the NBA. 17 of 21 shooting, 10 of 11 3-pointers.
What about Jokic?
If I told you that Aaron Gordon pulled that game off, do you think the Warriors, would you say the Warriors won? No.
Absolutely not.
But Steph was Steph, and he had 42, and it was like brilliant at the end.
How old is that guy now, by the way?
Steph, I looked it up because he's 37 and he's playing elite. He has not dropped off at all.
What has happened? And this actually will tie into Bitcoin. So DK can include this as well. Like, how is it that I feel like in ages past, like everyone was dumb by like 33 or 34. And like now, I mean, LeBron, how old is he? Like 50? Like these dudes keep dominating and they're like, Kevin Durant? I watched a game with him with the Rockets.
Durant, I think, is 39.
Nice. That's what I'm saying. And I'm like, dude, he looks like he did 20 years ago. So I guess my fundamental question, this is like kind of a tie into society, is are we at an age where all of the advances in technology at the very high end, if you're Steph Curry or LeBron James, you can drop infinite amounts of money and keep yourself young forever, while the rest of society basically crumbles with fiat flaps. I don't know. That's my take.
But
I think I don't think people focus on the importance of nutrition and sleep before, like 20 years ago, 40 years ago.
I think Michael Jordan wasn't sleeping well. I mean,
I think at the high end, it's even more pronounced and extreme. Like there's probably power law, but I think, your average, 50-year-old probably looks a lot better today than they did 20 years ago.
Really? I don't know.
Maybe not. I guess Just conjecture. Go on.
Cryogen freezing. I don't know. People are doing like something.
I go back home, Midwest. I don't know.
Okay, maybe it's living in California.
Yeah, also in the South. Like, not so much.
But yeah, so that was a great game. Oklahoma City's played two games so far. Both went to double overtime.
Yeah.
Double overtime. Double and they won both.
Which I thought
SGA
Rockets,
scored.
I
SGA that. Scored 55 last night.
55.
Like 23 for 26 free throws. And then there's some rookie for Philadelphia that scored 34 in his first game.
Wow.
Anyway, exciting start. And then did you see Wemby's game?
No.
I'll send you the highlights.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. But I mean, Wemby is Wemby, but he is more assertive and more powerful this season, it looks like, in this first game. He scored 40. He was, I mean, the dude, he like blocked the shot, grabbed the rebound, dribbled the full length of the court, was defended, like started driving to the basket, to the free throw line, stepped back, hits the three, gets fouled, makes a 4-point play. I mean,
so he looks like an MVP candidate.
He's ridiculous.
Yeah. But, I have to give a shout out. So I didn't get to watch this game, sadly, but I did watch the highlights. And one thing I enjoy doing now is just watching the highlights and putting on some like filthy, raunchy 90s Memphis rap and just watching Ja do his thing. I got to say, the Ja Morant redemption season is underway and I am super here for it. Ja's looking great. His hair is looking great. His game is looking great. He looks happy. And all we need is a happy Ja. Happy Ja is a winning Ja. And 35 in his first game, you know, he's not dunking anymore because he got to preserve those knees, which I, as a long term, you know,
really, he's not flying through the air,
not as much. But even his layups, I mean, he's got some, like, look at the highlights. He's got some sick. I mean, he's a special player. Like, he's got some sick layups. You know, Nike has made it clear they're investing in him. I think Ja could be the face of the league. You know, just, he's a lot more fun than what's his name, the dude in LA, not Bron, but the other guy.
Oh, Luca.
Yeah, Luca. Ja's so much more fun. So anyway, so I'm excited about
DK has no idea what we're talking about.
We're
like literally speaking code.
Yeah.
That he does not understand. But I will say
rough consensus right now.
But Ja is, just so you know, are aware, he's previously had some entanglements with the law, but he seems to be okay now. But nothing like what so just so the audience knows, there's a Bitcoin aspect to what we're talking about.
I didn't know there was a Bitcoin aspect. I barely there is. Heard
gambling.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So just, was it yesterday or 2 days ago? Breaking news, FBI arrests Chauncey Billups, head coach of the Portland Trailblazers.
And former player for, he was what? With the
he's a
Nuggets.
He's a champion.
He was a champion with Detroit.
Detroit.
Yeah.
Played for Colorado in college.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I grew up watching him against Iowa State.
Yeah. There you go.
And then there's a player was arrested and like a former coach or player was arrested for gambling and throwing games and like links to the Italian mafia.
Oh, geez.
Still, they're still around?
The Italian mafia?
They're still rigging games, damn.
And somehow, I saw some Twitter theory, I didn't follow up, so it's probably just like nonsense, but it all links back to like Louisville and Rick Pitino or something. But yeah.
That dude has a checkered past court history.
In any case, yeah, and then, you know, you can go look at some of the games, disputed games, and like this player was like airballing it. It was crazy.
What about John Calipari?
But now it's, but the latest like gambling apps, it's not just like, oh, I think this team's going to win or lose, but you can do these prop bets throughout the game.
Real time.
Real time prop bets throughout the game, specific players, specific things. So like this one player, he's accused of he's accused of telling bettors ahead of time, I'm going to leave the game after like 9 minutes. And guess what? He left the game after nine minutes. And then all the prop bets, like, so the people with this insider information took the under on what he's going to do in the game because he left the game after 9 minutes and they won a lot of money.
Wow.
And so that's going down. But I think it, and then one of you guys sent out, there's some, new sports betting app that made me.
You sent out, right?
Yeah. No, definitely not. I don't do sports betting.
I mean, I saw
maybe someone sent it to me and I started. Okay, yeah. Anyway, but it just made me think. DK and I actually invested in an investor like 7-8 years ago, ex Facebook guy, who created. He was creating a gambling app, and we thought it was super compelling vision because.
And it was on prop bets.
It was on prop bets.
I didn't even know what a prop bet was until he told me about it. Yeah.
But. So the Supreme Court had a ruling like a decade ago, which made it so that it the federally, it wasn't illegal to do sports betting. And that's enabled each state to decide what to do. And so slowly over time, more and more states have made it legal. So we knew this opportunity. We knew there's always demand for sports betting. And I think there can be healthy sports betting that doesn't rig games,
yeah,
right?
This sounds shitty, to be honest.
But what's funny about that app, they built out the Prop Bets app. It's called Betty Labs. And then they pivoted, though. They pivoted right when Clubhouse was like a big deal. There's like that window of time where everyone was talking about Clubhouse and using Clubhouse.
When everyone was locked in their homes.
And then Betty Labs decided to pivot, literally just clone that. And then they got acquired by Spotify months later for hundreds of millions of dollars.
For real?
Yeah. It was like one of our best investments ever. And it wasn't even what we invested in. In any case, how does this relate to Bitcoin? I mean, we talked before, Bitcoin and gambling are like, Bitcoin is a good currency for gambling, because gambling is often illegal in places, or gray area, or regulated, or whatever. It's one of those things.
You need that privacy.
Yeah, you need privacy. So, but also, I think it's not. Again, it depends on what you're talking about. But in general, gambling, I have no ethical issue with. Obviously, people are fixing games and stuff.
Yeah, that
crosses the line.
Fun. Yeah.
But just like without fixing games, like gambling, I have no ethical issue with.
Right.
I do wonder, like, why isn't Bitcoin more? I mean, we have seen evidence of Bitcoin being used for gambling,
yeah, well,
and
Bitcoin
growth.
Dice, right? That was like the original use.
Yeah. But even like recent, I discovered some gambling websites that use Bitcoin and saw some data that shows that it's growing in trend. So I think it's real, but I'm just surprised it's not more
like its main thing.
Because, I mean, sports betting in America is like $150 billion business.
For
like,
real?
82% of college males, like, bet on sports.
Really?
It's like insanely popular.
I've got a friend who has like, these kids are like, 16 or 18 year old. He said they just bet on everything.
Yeah.
Like any random
thing.
Sounds
extremely unhealthy.
They're just betting about like a teacher's going to do something in school and they create a prop bet on it. It's like huge in the culture right now if you're like a kid.
So, I mean, look, I don't have ethical qualms exactly. I mean, like, I think whatever, free markets, people can do what they want, but like, it does seem like something's broken. Like everyone's just betting on everything. I don't know. Maybe it's where I'm becoming a boomer, but
I think it's a
sad
symptom of the boomer. Like boomers had kind of had it easy, right? Like they sort of like just go to college, get a job, buy a house, like everything just works out. And I think now people are getting to a point where it's like you can't just kind of play the system and win. You kind of have to do something on the edge, something that's maybe too risky, but then a few pay off, and then that becomes the attraction. Yeah. Because
Max is okay with 100x leverage.
Yeah.
He's okay with OnlyFans. He's okay with drugs. But the betting a dollar on a prop bet, that's too much. No, I'm just joking.
It just seems, I mean, I hear you. It just seems
I'm saying
like,
it's like more of a symptom of the culture, the symptom of the structure.
It seems like something is ill in society when people are doing
that. I agree with you. It's all about moderation. I have no issue with betting. I've bet myself. Like, we do March Madness pools.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's all about moderation. It's social and fun. I haven't done one of these prop betting apps, but I would totally do it and have fun with it. It's like entertainment. If I go to Vegas, I'll play a little bit.
Yeah.
It's all about moderation.
Well, obviously, we have a glass of wine together or like fucking pounding.
If it's the mafia, if you're addicted, if it ruins your life, obviously that's crossing the line. But you can say that about almost
anything. And most technology, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, one question I have, right, is because one thing that Bitcoin has, I guess, taught me is to look at the incentives of things. So one question I have immediately is like, okay, well, if players are doing this, they can make money doing this, right? So one question I have is like, are they just not making him enough from the game itself? Right?
Well, the player that was arrested, I think he's on like a $96 million contract.
So that, like, what the fuck?
Like everything.
And I think he won like thousands of dollars at all for this gambling. So I think it's more
thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I think it's like psychological. Like it's just
feeling the feel of a win.
So I think I saw this. Where was it? Like, I don't know. Maybe if it was like on Twitter and speaking of addiction, but like, one of these guys, I saw some NBA player, and I sometimes feel like in my own little boomer world, like this is shocking, but when I moved back from Mexico a couple of years ago, I didn't even know what Apple Pay was, right? So like, it is what it is. I knew all about Bitcoin payments, but I was like, Apple Pay, what the fuck is this? How do I enable this thing? So I've been a boomer at various points of my life, proudly so. In this clip, the guy's sitting there on the floor, like floor side seats, I guess, And I think it was preseason because the game's just started. And he's there squatting. He's like, bro, I just need you to score one more basket. Come on, man. I'm just down one basket. And the player, I didn't even know who the player was, but looked back at him and said, you have an addiction. It's preseason. Like, relax. And I don't know. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. I hear you. People can do with Bitcoin whatever they want. But I hope we one day get to a world where it's not dopamine and I don't know.
Well, it may be the GLPs save everybody. Like today, they're mostly used for weight loss.
But you can use it for addiction battling. Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people are saying it just the way it regulates your dopamine, you actually breaks you of addictions and stuff like that. So if you're addicted to Twitter, you're addicted to gambling.
I don't know, man. Recently, I'm just like, it's become Amish.
Yeah.
No, I actually, what you're saying resonates. I agree. We got like 10 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit of Strike had an announcement of...
Bitcoin-backed loan.
Another Bitcoin-backed... I mean, they announced Bitcoin-backed loans a few months ago. We talked about it on the show. What they announced this week was line of credit. So I don't know
What's the difference?
Well, that's what I think we should talk about.
Yeah.
Theoretically, I don't think any of us like studied the product to know exact details to compare, but like what is the difference between a loan and a line of credit? Let's talk about that. Now, first of all, with the loans, I think a lot of people, when they think of a loan, they think of like a long-term loan. Like you get like a 30-year or 15-year home loan or a 5-year car loan or something. Now, most of the Bitcoin lending products are not 5, 15, or 30 years. They're like, I mean, what, the one presented yesterday was, 30 days up to a year.
Right.
And I think that's what we've seen from Lava and others as well. It's more, like less than 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Shorter term. Now, line of credit is, and I think you might know more about general concept of line of credit than maybe
Tell
me.
Tell us more.
But thank you. But it's a different.
He is a degenerate gambler.
He's got his,
we don't want to talk
he's
about
got his,
show,
prop, but... his prop bet line of credit.
His 100x prop bet.
But I
tokenized.
It's obviously credit as well, but it's definitely different than a lot. I mean, it's like it duration's different, and I do suspect this product is packaged up differently than taking out a loan. But do you have like? Can you tell us more about maybe line of credit in general and how it compares to like a loan?
Yeah, okay. Tell us more.
Well, I don't mean to represent the financial services industry. I mean, I guess I wouldn't claim any expertise in this, but I would talk about like a loan, you know, usually thinking about it as like maybe a fixed term, maybe there's an origination fee, there's a payback period and, you know, an APR or something. And so, maybe if you do a 1 year loan and then you want it to go on for a second year, maybe you have to renegotiate terms. Maybe you have to figure out an effective way to roll the loan over. And so you take out a new loan and part of your new loan pays back the proceeds of the old loan or, you know, your debt due on the old loan. And you kind of keep inching it forward, but you have to make more explicit decisions. It's kind of at least my understanding. I don't know if that's sort of what the financial services industry would say. And then a line of credit is a little bit more like, I want to spend some, so I'm going to use this, like I have a line of credit. I'm going to spend down from this line. And those can also be collateralized by, you know, equities or ETFs or whatever. But it's not like a fixed term. It's kind of constantly rolling. You know, APR changes daily based on SOFR and a spread. And you're just kind of constantly rolling it forward. So when I think about a line of credit, one of the things that I would think about is like, what are you collateralizing for your credit? And what is the growth rate of that? And then what is the cost of capital for that line of credit? And as long as you've got a healthy spread there, you know, you're probably going to be good. So if you think, I was talking through an example with a friend, mutual friend the other day. And if you believe that Bitcoin, you know, if you look at historical CAGR, I would guess that's not going to happen. But future CAGR is going to be a muted version of that, but not muted like treasuries. It's going to be muted like instead of 100% year over year, you're going to get 50% or 40% or 30%. It'll probably decrease 10 years out. Maybe you only get 20% a year. And it's volatile and stuff. But if your cost of capital is otherwise, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7%.
Speculative attack.
You can actually just run your life off of that.
MicroStrategy for your life.
Then there's also, yeah. I mean, credit cards, right? Which is another form of credit and debt. And so I don't know if the Strike announcement is more like line of credit or credit card. But I do think there's, I'm glad it exists. It's yet another recipe that's different than others, and we'll see what adoption's like.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what it's like. I will just come back. I mean, I feel like I'm increasingly becoming like the old man orthodox person here on the show. But like, I don't know if I haven't actually read it. I look forward to because I really appreciate everything Alan Farrington writes. He just wrote a new piece on Islamic finance and Bitcoin, which I'm extremely excited about. And the TLDR is basically, and it's not just Islam, but in many religions, usury is legal. Yeah, I don't know.
You think it's legal or illegal?
Illegal. Yeah. And I've always come back to this of like, we talked about this on that show. Maybe we should revisit this at some point in the future of like the what the world looks like when it's backed by a hard money or like a equity world versus a debt world. And, you know, I get it. Like it's, you're not going to go from zero to 100 over, like there has to be a transition period. You need to like kind of like fit Bitcoin into the existing financial services, fit Bitcoin to the existing mindset. But I don't know. But part of me is like, I do, I don't know. I hope over time people just like we don't need all these like tricky debt things. And, you know, even like, yes, Bitcoin backed loans, great business. Obviously I'm an investor in, you know, one of these companies, a couple of these companies, but like, I do hope we get to a world one day where that's not even necessary. But
I'm not sure though, that it makes sense to say it's not necessary because money is ultimately like allocation of resources and time and energy. Right. And there's people who are like, let's say you're, you know, 16 years old and you need to, what do you need? Buy a car, go to school, whatever. You need money for something that you're going to be like, you need to arbitrage time.
Right.
Credit is really just a way to arbitrage time. Now I think credit in general has kind of an appropriate bad rap because it's not really in service of the consumer. It's really in service of the platform because none of it's auditable and there's all kinds of bad terms that get snuck in there.
It also gets people hooked like prop betting.
Yeah.
What I was going to say. Yeah. It can be abused as well. I mean, if you don't pay off your credit card debt, you're paying 21% rates against that, you're digging yourself a hole forever. Totally.
I mean, one thing I think about though is like, I hear you. And I mean, we've chatted before about this is like, what is the role of debt in a Bitcoin world? Like, I think there will still be some. I think it's going to be dramatically less than we have today. I think you're going to see a lot more equity. And I think, so the hurdle rate of like Bitcoin, right? So in a world where you go from 2-3% inflation to 2-3% deflation, just as an example, all of a sudden now it's like, if I'm lending, like that's a much higher hurdle rate I have to hit. So this better be a damn good loan. Where I'm curious, and I think some interesting innovation could be is, I mean, look, I'm all for making money, but like if you can do that in a way that aligns incentives better. And so I think about, actually, I think mutual friends of mine from college, and I think friends of y'all's from other form of life or moment of life, Upstart, the company. Mm-hmm. Now, when they got started, in fact, one of my buddies from college was their guinea pig. The idea was you buy like equity in someone's upside. Mm-hmm. So instead of I'm a young person and you're arbitraging time, one way to do that is here's a loan. You have to pay me back. Good luck. Another way is, okay, like startup investing, I want to buy a percentage of your future cash flows.
Yeah, that's dicier for me. I mean, it may happen. You're like selling off your life.
Yeah, that's also risky.
I'd rather sell off some future capped amount. I think debt is a better product in that case than equity.
I think it depends. I think all these things come back.
Yeah, they're all just tools, but
it's also hard to like legalize and quantify. Legalize meaning like actually spell out.
Yeah, what do you own?
What do you own?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's a slippery slope to slavery, but like,
yeah.
so is debt.
I think debt is a more capped version, but yeah. I think, you know, but I would say ultimately these are tools of arbitraging time.
Right, exactly.
And so like, if you want to build a data center with a bunch of solar,
who might want to do that, gentlemen?
It doesn't exist today. Somebody needs to pay for it. Somebody has to take risk, and you're going to take risk and time and bake those together. And if equity is useful in certain cases where you need uncapped upside, but if you're going to own the panels that you could redeploy in case they fail, you actually have it collateralized by those panels to some extent. So actually, maybe debt is a better version there. So I'm actually not opposed to the concept of debt, though a lot of people use debt in very
irresponsible
ways. But I think the concept is not bad. It's just misused, abused, not kind of properly employed. But if you employ it appropriately, it can actually help you achieve your goals in a better way than anything else.
Perhaps. And I mean, I hear you. And there's probably like always gradations, and it depends on the specific circumstance. Equity in its best form, though, what I like about this is in terms of incentives, number one, if the venture fails, you're off the hook. So that's very important. I think that's a critical, critical aspect. One thing with debt is if the venture fails for whatever reason, and perhaps you just misprice the risk or whatever, like that becomes sort of an albatross. And then there's like bankruptcy laws. It doesn't have to.
Totally depends on the terms.
It depends on the terms. It depends on the country you're doing it and all that. Yeah. But the other thing that's nice about equity, when it's used correctly, maybe there needs to be, you know, capped upside, perhaps it's just as a nonprofit and then become a company.
There's abuse all over the place.
Exactly. There's abuse everywhere. But one thing that is really nice is in theory, it and this was the idea of Upstart in the early days, was it aligns the equity holders to want to help that person. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is to try and grow the pie and not just claw back no matter what. And I do think those are very different mindsets. The mindset of let's grow the pie versus I'm clawing no matter what.
Yeah.
But
cool. Should we
wrap it at that?
Yeah.
All right.
Good show, guys.
Thanks, guys.